Welcome back to our podcast. Today I will be speaking to Jackie Vose from our partner agency and founding member of GOC Demoso in the UK. Hi Jackie, and thank you very much for being here today and telling us more about Demoso, your approach to communication works, and giving us insights of the British PR business.
Hi Vivian, happy to be here.
So tell us a little bit more about Demoso and your background, which is really impressive.
I don't know about that, but Demoso is a company that was founded in 2011. Before then, I was running various PR agencies, and I actually co-founded Global One Communications way back in, I think it was about 2002 or 2001, I can't quite remember, with Oliver from A&O and Eddie from Oxygen. And back then I was with a PR company called Flapjack, which I sold. Then I continued to run the European arm of a big American PR agency called Peppercom. Then I did a management buyout and set up Demoso in 2011. And Demoso is a company that has technology running through its veins. It is PR, it is marketing, it is consultancy. And I really now look at us, and one of my clients described us as a go-to-market agency, a go-to-market consultancy, because we really help companies go from either startup or scale up or divisionalize in terms of what they want to be doing with their communication. So breadth of services is wide, and our roots are very much in technology. And Demoso stands for digital, mobile, and social. And I sort of abbreviated each one of those words because what I wanted to do with Demoso when I first set it up was have a company that would look at its clients holistically for their communication needs. And the company that I'd previously been part of very much put each need in silos. So they had a mobile division, they had a digital division, they had a crisis division, they had a media relations division. And I didn't like that because I saw that as an area where you could get gaps in your understanding of the needs of your client. And so Demoso was founded on those principles. And I was a big believer that mobile would dominate our world. And thank goodness it did, because otherwise I'd look a bit silly now. So Demoso is digital, mobile, social. And now with the metaverse, we've got, and I'm thinking about getting the brand extension .me for metaverse, Demoso.me. Maybe I'll change it from a .com. I don't know.
It's very interesting. So I imagine it was quite difficult to explain to companies that they should approach their communication holistically and not think in those pillars, marketing, PR, mobile, whatsoever. And so you don't just say yes to your clients. You have a vision for them. You have the big picture in mind, and you want them to follow that. How does that work out? Do they accept that, or
sometimes no? It is difficult because, and it really comes from the top. I was talking to another company in marketing service supply yesterday, and we were discussing the fact that without it coming from the top, from CEO level, it's very difficult for CMOs and marketing managers to change the way they budget, to change the way they address where their priorities are going to be focused. So yes, I do find sometimes there is a pushback to our approach. And I often say that we as a company are very much like Marmite. It's a two-way journey with any client. But I do believe that every client has to sort of take themselves back to basics, whether they be small or large. Every client has to look at every channel of communication that they have, be that internal, be that through their salespeople, be that through their investor relations. And their messaging has to stay the same across all of those channels. And the types of channels today that we find different generations using are in multiples now. In the old days, we just literally had to get a piece in Die Welt or the Financial Times. These days, we have podcasts, we have metaverses, we have social media channels, we have all sorts of different channels to bring together as part of our communication strategies. So I am quite forthright with my clients, and some don't like that, and usually just not through their own fault, just through the way that they are channeled in terms of their budgetary approach.
Right. And do you experience a difference between, let's say, tech companies or more traditional companies? You've worked for Henkel as well, because we are noticing we're using the same approach to that every message should be sent over various channels and everything should be regarded holistically. In my experience from Germany, sometimes it's a little bit hard to explain that to clients. They're still very much thinking in PR, in marketing. Is that different in the UK, or is it different between the various branches?
I think culturally we're all different in each country. And I think that's really, that's the sort of founding principle of GOC, isn't it? That we're all very different in our own countries. But clients don't differ that much. I mean, you mentioned Henkel, which is a great company to work for, and they do try to be very forward thinking. But yeah, it is different between types of clients. I wouldn't say. I think startups have different requirements. They're much more about establishing their reputations, whereas larger companies are about maintaining and protecting their reputations, or maybe even shifting to reflect a new generation of consumers. So each company has different stresses on them. Do they resist change and innovation? Possibly, just coming back to what I said before about it all comes from the CEO. And it's amazing. If you look at GE, for example, which is a company that you and A&O and myself and Oxygen all worked on for many years, when you saw Jeff Immelt come in and come up, and we helped work, in fact, I helped work with Beth Comstock on the GE Imagination campaign principles, and then we executed those across Europe. That's a really great example of a CEO who came in and said, I want us to be known for innovation, and I want our innovation message to go across all of our business units, whether that be transportation, whether that be light bulbs, whether that be appliances, whether it be healthcare. I want innovation stories coming out of my company all the time. I want GE Imagination campaign to basically show the innovative side of the company, which had been previously seen as a great behemoth. And so, you know, you use an example like Jeff Immelt with CEOs of smaller organizations, but, you know, they could be employing thousands and thousands of people. We need that real bravery from a CEO to say, no, I want a certain amount of budget to go into innovative thinking. Because, and then the first place to test innovation is, I totally believe, in your communications and how you position and message your company. And that's where you start to get a real feel for whether those messages work. Because nowadays, we are very much in a dialogue with our customers. It used to be that we'd be broadcasting out a message. And I do see that still as something that our larger companies want to do. They want to broadcast rather than engage in dialogues. And now with so many different technologies in customer service and everything else, a lot of that engagement gets lost when it comes back to the communications professionals like us. So you might find I love going into companies and talking to their customer service professionals or their salespeople, because they're the ones that have that day-to-day two-way dialogue with the consumer base. And that really helps you shape your message for organizations.
Do you think that will change even more or enhance even more now with the metaverse, when companies have to, they constantly have to adapt to new communication channels? We saw Clubhouse last year, which was, yeah, basically just a hype. How do you think that will develop, or what challenges will that impose?
I mean, I wouldn't want to be a CMO in a large company for any money whatsoever, because there are so many different approaches that they must get from people saying, try this, do this, try that. And now they've got the metaverse coming towards them. I mean, it's a thankless task, really, which is why I always encourage CMOs to just go back to those basics, mm-hmm. And then see where all of their customers are hanging out. So when we look at the metaverse, you know, that's very much a Gen Z environment, and Gen Z is all over it because they come from gaming and understanding their social channels are happening on the gaming channel. So the metaverse makes perfect sense to them. But if you look at an older consumer base, then you're not necessarily looking totally at the metaverse. So for companies who are looking to influence Gen Z or take their brands to Gen Z, I actively encourage them to look at what the metaverse can offer. The metaverse is also an amazing space for recreating yourself. So if you've got a failing brand and you've got a good product, but your brand is not resonating, but you know that your product will be something that a metaverse audience would love positioned correctly, then then that is definitely a channel you should look at. But it's always back to basics, isn't it, Vivian? You know, definitely. It's making sure that you just look at your audience, where they're hanging out, and how you're communicating with them. And one thing audiences have changed today in, and it doesn't matter whether you're Gen Z or the millennial or whatever, audiences today expect more of a dialogue. They expect reactions. They expect reactions quickly. They expect good customer service. They don't like to wait. They're used to the Twitterverse of, you know, everything in 40 characters, short form communication, everything happening now. And that's not just Gen Z. So equally, when we cast our messages out, we have to be very cognizant of the fact that we have an audience that wants to give back. And that is how I see communications changing, has how communications has fundamentally changed for us as practitioners. We have to be aware of and across all of the technologies that allow that help our clients engage properly with their audience bases and help them put in the processes that do that, and then help them learn how to do takeaways from that, and then how to act on those takeaways. So it's much more complex nowadays, but it's still simple if you take a process-based approach and a back to basics approach.
I think that's a very, very, very good point that you're making, that it does come back to the basics, and that when a new social media channel comes up, or, you know, a new app whatsoever, some people or some companies might think that they have to jump on that trend and that they have to do it. But, you know, first, it is so important to think, okay, is this really relevant for my target group, or am I just spending my money on something that is not actually going to help me because my target group is not on that channel?
Exactly. But also another thing, Vivian, I find, looking back 5-6 years ago, people maybe used to review their messaging once every couple of years, sometimes once every 3 years. Now you need to be reviewing your messaging at least once a year, if not once every 6 months. Things are changing so rapidly. The world is running at a much faster pace. And our brands are being adopted in many different ways by different groups. I mean, you just look at, I'll give you a really good example. Let's look at TikTok. Mm-hmm. Now, TikTok is, everybody thinks TikTok's just used by kids to, you know, to just scroll through these inane videos of silly things like kids unwrapping things or eating sweets or doing dances. And yes, of course, that's where it started. But now TikTok is becoming much more of a sophisticated channel to the point that clever marketers are looking at it. So TikTok was used very cleverly by the Minions film, where they just, there was a viral video just going around, which drove so many more children to watch the, of older group of children to go to ask their parents to take them to the Minions, which they wouldn't normally do, just via a viral TikTok video. And, you know, that was very clever marketing. But you'll find that adults have now been driven to the TikTok channel, and parents are also monitoring the TikTok channel. And I've been using TikTok just recently to go to games developers. It's amazing, the reach of the channel. That you know, so don't just cut off a channel because you think that's not your channel. Really, you know, I think there's a lot to be said for revisiting your messaging, revisiting your positioning very frequently, and researching your target group and just finding out where they're hanging out, because they do change. And they and they do change per country, as you and I have experienced through our work. You know, I would say nowadays in the UK, Facebook really isn't happening. But it might be happening for you in Germany. Certainly LinkedIn is a big channel for us on a B2B social network. But is that, you know, as prevalent in Germany? And it certainly isn't allowed even in China. So, you know, we have to really think about culturally and then globally. There's a lot for, as I said, I wouldn't be a CMO if you paid me.
Understandable. And I mean, most companies have gotten used to using Facebook and Instagram. You know, at first, of course, that was new to them too. And they were like, okay, do we really have to use those platforms? Now they're using them, but now there's TikTok. So we experience with quite a few clients or prospective clients that are using TikTok, which would be great to reach Gen Z as potential new employees, because in Germany we have a big problem with finding new employees, and with young people applying for apprenticeships. And I mean, on Instagram or Facebook, you don't find that target group. So they really have to adapt quickly and
absolutely.
Yeah, and see where they can reach and how creative they can reach their target groups now. So I totally understand that you wouldn't want to be a CMO now.
No, because obviously if you look at your many requirements, I mean, you talk about, you know, recruitment being a big requirement. We're so lucky now that we can actually give people a bird's eye view of our workplaces. You know, you can do video interviews with workers. You can do podcasts like you're doing a podcast with me today. There's all sorts of different techniques you can have to show how great your workplace is, not just words on a website. And that all comes back to us. All of those, you know, we are sitting at the heart of all the communications for a company. So coming back to our original point is, you know, knowing what your communications objectives are, thinking about the channels that your audience group are residing on, and thinking how you can create a real impact as well as a positive engagement and dialogue with those audience groups. So, yeah, and yes, I'm afraid, you know, you will have people wringing their hands going, oh my days, I've only just got Insta and Facebook sorted, and now I've got to look at Snap and TikTok and the metaverse. Well, you know, sometimes that is necessary considering what your objectives are.
Definitely. So how does you and your team stay up to date with the new platforms? And do you, when you're looking for new employees, do you distinguish between who's got the new or who's very, very interested in the new platforms and whatsoever? Do you Absolutely. Maybe distinguish, okay, you have already people who are very good at TikTok and now you're looking for someone who's very good at metaverse? Is that something that you also focus on?
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, I don't think anybody is very good at metaverse yet because it's the great unknown. You know, we're really pioneering in the metaverse space. I mean, I'm very heavily involved in the metaverse. I have, I do a lot of work in the metaverse space. And I know all the major metaverse players like Decentraland, Sandbox, Yahaha, Avakin Life, all those guys. And I do work with them all. And it is, it's a wild west at the moment. So I don't think you can say that I'd be looking for employees who are good at the metaverse. But what I'm very passionate about my team and my employees, and I like to bring them up myself. I don't like recruiting outside. I like to recruit very bright graduates. And certainly when we're looking at the kind of people that we want to get on board, those people who have good social media followings themselves, who know how to curate and engage with their own social audiences, are very interesting to me when I interview them. But equally, I also look at the standard old things that you look at with a potential new employee. Have they got work experience? Have they actually worked in a service industry? Have they worked in high pressure environments like a bar? All those sort of things that you look at when you're recruiting people. Yeah, from our recruitment perspectives, we definitely do look to graduates. We do look to young people enthusiastic about communications. And that actually, Vivian, is what keeps us current as well. You said, how do you learn? Well, right. you learn by reading, but you also learn through other people's experiences. And I think making sure that you have a really good cross-section of individuals from young to old really keeps you real as a communications organization. Because I think, and again, coming back to the poor CMO, we all just see things from our own experience. And that's a very difficult thing to get your mindset out of. And so, you know, when I'm working with a cryptocurrency company, for example, I know that the majority of people that we're going to have to go to are people who are watching Love Island. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's the Gen Z's of this world. And how am I going to come up with something that appeals to them? I'm not Gen Z. And the CMOs of large brands are not Gen Z either, but they know they have to be there. So you have to have people within your organization who represent the audience groups that you're trying to communicate with so that you don't look like a dad dancer of communication.
I think that's a very interesting, very, very good point. Because in recruitment, oftentimes you see those, it's kind of like a joke in Germany. I don't know about the UK, but that some HR managers are looking for the graduate who has also at least 5 years of work experience, and you know, that it's sometimes really unrealistic to meet those criteria. But I really like that you pointed out it's good to have those young people, those graduates in your team, and to teach them, and but also to learn from them what their generation wants to see online, for example.
Absolutely. And you know what? I'm not an education snob. And I have employed people in the past that haven't been graduates, that have come straight from college. But I'll tell you one thing, a bit of real world experience, having to go out and live on your own, and really test yourself, you know, away from your family and everything else, does make that 3 years of being, or four or 5 years in some cases, of being, you know, away in education and doing that growing up, really does make a difference. And I, you know, from not just from a kind of a writing or a reading standpoint, but just that maturity that you gain from those 3 years away from your family, you do see a real marked difference between that person that's just come straight out of college and that person who's come out of university. Definitely. So if there are any youngsters listening to this, I would absolutely encourage you to try to do a degree, not just for the academic standpoint, but from that whole learning and growing as a human being.
Definitely. So are you currently expanding your team, maybe location-wise as well?
Yes, we are. We're very excited at the moment because we're just about to open our Scottish office. And we've already recruited two people in Scotland, and we're looking to actively bolster up that office at the moment. So Lisa, who's the general manager of our Scottish office, is recruiting. And Scotland is an amazing country, and culturally, yes, different to England. And I think, you know, in the larger countries like Germany, like France, you appreciate that. You do have different regions that have different cultural requirements. And certainly from our perspective, we do a lot of work with gaming and technology companies. And there's a huge games industry up in Scotland that we want to really be there for, to service and to, you know, to be, you know, deep in the weeds of that particular pond. And it's a burgeoning industry in Scotland. So, and some really great, you know, great recruits to be had. And this is something else that I don't think I would have ever been able to do without technology today. You know, the ability to, you know, be 24/7 with your staff via, you know, all sorts of technical platforms like Slack, like Zoom, you know, Microsoft Teams, whatever you use to communicate. We can be there in a, you know, microsecond, whereas before, just being on a telephone didn't really cut it. Having to do long journeys didn't really cut it. But now, you know, I can do a lot of training and development online and, you know, actively work with each individual online. So that's really, you know, great.
Definitely. Well, yeah, congratulations, of course, to expanding in Scotland. Is working there different, is communication wise? Do you have to focus on different things compared to London, or
is it
all the same?
I think London is very culturally diverse, very homogenous, whereas Scotland is fierce to its roots, and very, you know, local campaigns work a lot more effectively than they would in London, for example. And that, you know, the northwest and the northeast equally of Great Britain and Wales and Ireland and Northern Ireland, they all have their own quirks and specific communications strategies work very differently in each. But certainly a more local and focused approach in Scotland works really, really well.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Jackie, for your all your insights. It was very interesting. And
thank you.